Those of you who are familiar with the Old Testament know that God conquered the northern kingdom by the Assyrians and scattered them, took the southern kingdom into captivity by the Babylonians, and it was not just because of their idolatry, but much of it was because of their injustice. And so we find the prophets frequently addressing the injustice that is going on and injustice among the people of God to the people of God. So here's one of those calls from Isaiah 58, verse 6. Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? As Danny mentioned in his prayer, our speaker this morning is Greg Darley from International Justice Mission, and please welcome him as he comes to speak.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having the heaters on. My toes are still cold. Bless you for enduring that. I'm from the South, and so this is really far north for me to be up here, but I'm excited. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we get to spend a few moments. So for the next like hour and 45 minutes, we're going to dive in. I know you're excited for the Old Testament and look at this idea of justice. No, I'm just kidding. It'll just be a few minutes. But how many of you are going to take a quick survey? How many of you have a moment when you look back in your life and you had an opportunity to do something and you didn't do it and you regret it? How many of you? All right, half of you. The other ones, you're just embarrassed and lying. So we're in a chapel, so that's all of us, right? So maybe it was like, you know, you should have tried out for the team. Or, you know, you should have, like, gone for that major. Maybe you should have asked her out or, you know, not, you know, asked him out or, you know, whatever. If it's the person next to you, don't elbow them or anything like that. You know, no looking, right? Well, for me, I have one of those moments, and it happened so long ago, but it's just still so vivid. So the summer between my junior and senior year in high school, A couple of buddies of mine, we were up at his lake house in North Georgia in the mountains. And so we spent like the whole day on the lake, you know, jet skiing and inner tubing, you know, just doing stuff that 17-year-old kids do when they get together. And so we're coming back home, like to the lake house, and we come up to this bridge. And so like in a boat, you have to slow down and go really slow under the bridge, right? You can't go flying under it. And so as we're, you know, sneaking, I mean, going pretty slow under this bridge, I let, you know, this statement come out of my mouth that I'm like, you know, it's one of those where like, oh, you wish you could grab it, right? You know, you like, you make a joke, and you're like, no, like, you don't look like an elephant, oh, and like you, right? And so like, these words come out, and I grab it, and I'm like, oh, no. I said, well, when I was younger, at my grandparents' lake, we used to jump off this bridge near their house like all the time. And so my friend's dad stops the boat, and he's like, well, hey, let's go for it. And so stops the boat, so I jump out of the boat and swim to the shore, and then you have to, like, make your way, like, through the woods, because it's like, this is not like a water park, right? There's not like a, you know, nice paved path. So I'm climbing up, you know, through the woods. You're barefoot, so you're like, you know, you're going across pine needles and, you know, rocks and stuff, and then you have to walk all the way back down, and so you get into the center of the bridge, because you don't want to jump on the end, right? We know that, right? So you want to jump in the middle, the deep end. And so I step up on the ledge, and I look down, and we're in a chapel, and so I will not tell you the thoughts that I was thinking. And I was like, there's just no way. There is no way that I'm going to jump. I mean, I have a fear of heights, so I don't know what I was thinking. And so I step back off the guardrail, and I do like the ultimate walk of shame. And so like I drop my head, and I walked back down the rocks, over the pine needles, like wade back into the water, and I swim to the boat, and like nothing said, right? Everyone's just kind of like, we're not looking, you know, we don't want to make eye contact, right? And so what happened is, you know, I look back at that story, and I'm like, you know what would have been a better story if I would have said, so we got up on this bridge, and it was like 40 feet high, and we just like, you know, swan dove, off into the lake, and it was awesome, right? But I can't tell you that story. I tell you, I had the opportunity to come and to jump, and I did it. So a few years ago, I am living, my wife and I have been married for just a few years, and through some friendships with some people, I started learning some things that were happening in the world that I had never heard of. I grew up in suburbia outside Atlanta, Georgia, you know, went to a really nice high school, went to a really nice college. You know, I know we all have our past, you know, weird families, but for the most part, pretty normal American upbringing. And I started hearing some stories when I started meeting some friends that worked in some different ministries. And I became shocked and I became paralyzed, and there was just overwhelming sense to want to do something. And so just so you know where we're going, I'm hoping that at the end of our time together, that some of you will hopefully join in this path and in this journey that I've started, and that you will take a jump. And so I started learning that there are people today that every day they wake up and they have to work for someone for 14 and 16 and 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they don't get paid. And I learned that there are little girls as young as 6 trapped in establishments where they are sold to people for sex 7 and 8 and 15 times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And I started hearing stories like Lena and Sanan. Lena was 13 and Sanan was 16, and they lived in Cambodia, and they were great friends. And they did everything together, right? We all have friends that, you know, we like to go to the movies and hang out and watch TV and video games and go to coffee shops, and right? And we spend time with them. Well, Lena and Sanan were best friends. They were connected at the hip. They did everything together. Their families were close, and they had a lot in common, too. And one of the things they had in common is that their dads, because of just economic circumstances and just honestly some stuff outside of their control, they couldn't keep jobs a lot. And so what that meant was is that the families had a hard time, you know, putting food on the table, and they had a hard time, you know, just living. And so one day they won what they would consider the lottery. Sanan's aunt comes to visit, and she tells the girls about an opportunity where they can work at a coffee shop full-time, provide income, you know, and then help provide for their families. And so, I mean, of course, they talk it, you know, they're talking around like, hey, this is awesome. Like, well, we can have consistent work. We can have a consistent paycheck. I mean, that's something that probably very few of us in this room, when we were 13 and 16, were thinking, hey, I've got to get a job, you know, so I can provide, you know, for my family. So they decide to go with their aunt. And so for me, when I think about what it would look like to work at a coffee shop, because that was the opportunity they were given, so they're going to come work for this coffee shop, I think about this, right? This is where I do a lot of work, is in my local Starbucks. And so, you know, you got the barista, you got the bar, you got the expensive coffee, you know, the cool lights and all that stuff, right? So when I think of a coffee shop, or like the one we went to this morning across the street, the cool little old house, like that was a cool coffee shop, love that. Alumni support the local community, love that. And so that's what I think of. And so what happens is that Sanan and Lena, they go with her aunt and they get to the coffee shop. And when they get out of the car, this is actually what the coffee shop looked like. And they looked at each other and they're like, no, like, this is the coffee shop. And so the aunt gets them out of the car and says, come on inside, we know we got to get to work. And so they go down this next picture, they go down this hallway. And they instantly learn that these back 3 rooms are bedrooms and that they had been trafficked. And so every day now for their lives, their job is not serving coffee. Their job is serving their bodies. And so I start processing stories like this, and this is one of literally thousands upon really millions of people. Estimates today that there are 27 million people trapped in slavery. 2.5 million of those are minors trapped in the sex industry. 2.5 million. So I started reading stuff like that, and for me, given my faith background, The first thing I did was I went to the scriptures and I'm like, God, what do you have to say about this? Because there is something inside of me. Hopefully there's something inside of you when you hear that. Something inside of you says that's not right. It makes you angry, right? Most guys, they want to go Jack Bauer, knock down the doors, like Taken, you know, go rescue them out, right? Most girls, they want to, you know, just go hug the girls. Some girls I know, I've been told, no, I want to knock down the doors too. That's fine. But there's something inside of you, right, that just starts like bubbling up. I want to do something. And so I dug in the scriptures and I came across some stuff like this. Deuteronomy 16:20. God says, follow justice and justice alone so that you may live and possess the land the Lord your God is giving you. Leviticus 19:15. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly. Psalm 11:7. For the Lord is righteous. He loves justice. The upright will see his face. Psalm 56. And the heavens proclaim his righteousness, for he is a God of justice. And so I started reading, and this is like the tip of the iceberg. There's tons in the scriptures talking about God's heart for justice, God's heart for the oppressed, for the widow, for the orphan, for those that are trapped in injustice. And so like this sense came over me, and it was so relieving that the thing that was bothering me and that was literally keeping me up at night, that was making me so mad, that was just propelling me to want to do something, was making God mad too. There's other verses in Scripture talking about God hates injustice. He loves justice, and he hates seeing the oppressed, you know, what happens to them. And so it was a sense of relief of like, okay, so the thing that's bothering me is also bothering God. And so then the next question is, well, what is the plan? Right? So it's like, okay, so we know that God, this is going on in the world. We know that you hate it. And so I started looking around. I'm like, what is the plan? Like, what are we actually going to do about this? And so then the verse that the dean read a minute ago, Isaiah 58:6. God is talking to his people. And this was a religious people, right? They did religious gatherings like this. They had ceremonies and they read the scriptures and they worshiped and they did fasting. They did all these religious activities. You know, and so for some of you in the room, that your only picture of, you know, growing up of, you know, Christianity or religion was, oh, it's just like the religious service, and it's like, you know, it's just singing, and it's, you know, you go to another Bible study and all that. Like, God says, no, 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 no. It's more than that. He says, is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loosen the chains of injustice and to untie the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. See, it's so important, right? Because we all want to please God, right? We want to walk with him. We want to be in relationship with him. And so the things that bother God should bother us. The things that God loves, we should love. The things that God hates, we should hate. And so what he is saying here in this is that it's not just about the religious activity on the outside. It's also about looking around and seeing those around you that you can serve. See, we are called by God to be his instruments of compassion and mercy and justice. And Jesus' ministry was built upon that, and I wish I had hours that we could sit here and we could walk through that. Maybe we'll come back in a few months or something and we can do that. But Jesus' ministry was built upon that. And so this is what God is saying. He's saying, this matters to me. And so Isaiah 1:17, this is where it changes though. There's a subtle shift here. And so God is speaking through Isaiah, and he's actually talking to the people. And so he says to the people, right? God's not saying this to himself. He's not, you know, sending a memo to the Son or the Spirit, like he's not doing this whole. He is actually talking to the people. And so as he said it to the people, I say this is God's call to us. He says, learn to do good. seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, and plead for the widow. So do you notice the shift there? It's no longer God is not talking to himself saying, I hate injustice, I hate violence, I hate oppression. He actually turns to the people and he says, I want you to seek justice. I want you to defend the orphan, to plead the case for the widow. And so the question really is not, what is the plan? The question really should be, who is the plan? Because God has looked to us and he says, I want you to be the ones to seek justice. And see, God always has a plan, right? God had a plan with Noah. He told him to build a boat, right? See, God had a plan to get the Israelites out of Egypt. He said, Moses, lead them. Right? God had a plan to build the church. He said, Paul, go make disciples and plant churches. And so when we survey what is happening in the world with the Lena and Sanans of the world, God is looking to us and he's saying, go. At IJM, we firmly believe that we are the plan. Not IJM, but God's people. We are the plan. And the scary thing is, there's no plan B. And so God is saying, if my people don't show up, then nothing's going to happen. We are the plan. I love this in Isaiah 6. Isaiah is sitting before the Lord, and he says, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And he says, I love this. He says, here I am, send me. And what's crazy about that is that God didn't give the job description before he said, hey, who's going to go for me? And so as you're processing this faith journey, as you're processing, you know, answering God's call for your life, this is kind of a mini quick sermon here. True discipleship, true following and obedience is saying yes no matter what the job description is. God is looking for people that will say yes. And so he calls out, he says, hey, who will go for me? Who will be the voice of truth? And Isaiah says, send me. He didn't know what he was getting into. And so that is what we need to do. We need to come before God and say, yes, I'll go. And it could mean that you go 4 blocks this way and do the work of justice. It could mean you go 40,000 miles that way and circumnavigate the globe and say, I'll go do justice. I'll plead for the orphan. I'll plead for the widow that way. And so at IJM, we are a Christian human rights organization that has taken this call very seriously. I think there's a map here. I want to show you kind of where we work. So we have 16 field offices around the world. And all of these offices, we are seeking justice. So we have cases like Lena and Sanan where we try to go into brothels and rescue girls out. We go into brick factories where slaves are held every day making bricks. I mean, we've had clients as young as 4 that we've helped rescue that have been banging rocks together, making gravel by hand, because it's cheaper that way. So we work all across the world trying to be voices and trying to actually put hands and feet to this idea of seeking justice. So Lena and Sanan are trapped in this coffee house, which is really a brothel. And so every day, they are forced to serve clients 3, 4, and 5 times a day. And if they ever refuse, the guy who owns the coffee shop will beat them. And so every day they're just living in this just nightmare. And there are only 3 rooms in this in the place, and so there were more than 3 girls, and so oftentimes, If there were more than 3 customers, a lot of times they would have to serve customers in the same room. So there'd be 3 and 4 people raping these girls in the same room, just humiliating them over and over and over again. And they were held by deception so that if you try to leave, if you try to get help, not only will we track you down and find you, but the girls that are still here, they're going to receive the wrath of your decision. And so what was happening, and so these girls are in a different area of Cambodia. This is happening to them. Well, back in their hometown, the parents were trying to get a hold of them. You know, they were excited that they had new jobs and that they could help provide income, but they were trying to get a hold of them. They couldn't. And so after weeks of not being able to get a hold of them, they connected with the authorities. There's actually an anti-trafficking segment of the police that IJM a few years ago helped train. And so they said, we can't find our daughters. We need your help. And so IJM and the anti-trafficking force, they start investigating, trying to figure out. And so what happens is that Lena and Sanan actually, through incredible bravery, it was actually Lena first, actually escaped from the brothel, was able to get out. And so for 3 days, she's out of the brothel, and she manages to get word to some authorities saying, hey, this is what's happening. But the 3 days that she was gone, she knew what was happening to her best friend. And she just couldn't stand the fact that because she had escaped, that her best friend was still just killing, being you know, brutally raped. And so she actually did the unthinkable. She actually willingly went back and said that, I'm not leaving until we both can go together. And so IJM, at this time, because of the information, figures out, okay, this is where they are. And so the anti-trafficking force in IJM, they actually come up and they do a raid of this brothel, and 9 girls, minors, were rescued from this brothel. All 3 traffickers were arrested, including Sanan's aunt. And they were reunited with their families. And this happens all the time around the world, is that justice is possible. Freedom is possible when God's people shows up. And so the invitation is this, is not just to get involved with IJM. That's not it. God is doing something bigger than that. God has a move. He has a heart for justice that is moving through His people, and He is inviting us to be a part of that. And so my invitation to you is to be a part of that. We would love for you to be a part of that. So, fast forward a year, I just graduated high school. And this time we're at the lake, and we are celebrating with a lot of friends. So there are way more people up there at the lake house this time. And so we go out on the lake, same deal, right? Fun, jet skis, inner tubes, all this stuff. And we're coming back up to like the infamous bridge. And so we're pulling up, and now there are a ton of people here this time. And so one of my friend's younger brother says, hey, let's all go jump off this bridge. Right, you're seeing where this is going. And I'm like, we kind of make eye contact, like, there ain't no way. So my friend's freshman brother jumps to the boat, swims to the shore, climbs up the rocks, walks down the bridge, looks, and just dives off the bridge. And so we're all sitting there saying, holy cow. I'm like, we're not going to get shown up. We just graduated. You know, we're high school graduates. Freshman, you know, brother's not showing us up. Anyway, so we all jump off. So there's like, I don't know, 7 or 8 of us would jump off. And we get up there, and I'm like, well, if we're going to do this, we have to do this together. Because there is no way I can do this without your help. And so we all line up, and I'm like, I can't look down, I can't look down, I can't look down. And so we line up. And I say, all right, guys, let's go for it. And so we all jump. And together we made one of the coolest memories that I have. And I have this as I keep this. I actually had to scan this in because this was before digital cameras were invented. That's me on the far end. And we jumped. And I look back at this story, and this is the closing point, is that it is overwhelming to think about the breadth of injustice that is happening in the world. It is overwhelming when you say, hey, you know, we're a group of 1,000 people, and there are 27 million people trapped in slavery. What could we do? But the reality is this, is that when we jump together, we can make an impact. Let me close with this. I know you're giving me the time, and I apologize. Let me close with this quote. So we have a campaign that we're doing on college campuses around the country right now. It's called Stand for Freedom, and I was hoping we could show the video, but we couldn't this morning. So we're doing this. It's a 27-hour standing vigil that we're having students do to raise money and awareness for the 27 million slaves around the world. We have 400 schools that have already signed up to participate. I do not believe Geneva is one of them. I would love for you guys to be involved. And so the theme that we're going with this, we use this quote from William Wilberforce. He was a Christian politician that helped abolish the British slave trade. And he made this presentation and plea to Parliament one day. And this is his quote after he shared about the realities of injustice. And this is what I leave with you. He says, "You may choose to look the other way, but you can never again say that you did not know." Thank you.